Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
Today, the gifts that prompted state and federal investigations of Virginia's current governor and helped reshape the campaigns of the candidates running for governor. I'm Maylilly Lee. Thanks for joining us. Governor Bob McDonnell and his family members received thousands of dollars in gifts and loans from Star Scientific and its chief executive, Johnny Williams. Most of the family's gifts were not reported on McDonnell's annual statements of economic interest. That's in keeping with Virginia's soft ethics laws. Right now, only office holders, not their family members, must report gifts worth more than $50. And gifts from personal friends are also exempt from reporting requirements. Governor McDonnell has apologized for taking the gifts, returned them, and repay the loans, but says he didn't break the law and that Williams and Star Scientific received no financial benefits from the state, a point supported by a special attorney who was asked to review the details earlier this year. Still, the investigations into the gifting issue continue, as do calls to change Virginia's ethics laws, including proposals from Democrat Terry McAuliffe and Republican Ken Cuccinelli, who just days ago donated $18,000 to a Richmond charity. That's the net worth of gifts Johnny Williams gave him. We have with us today two people who have been following Virginia politics, including ethics laws, for decades. From his office on the campus of James Madison University, we welcome Dr. Robert Roberts, professor of political science, author of several books and articles on politics and ethics. Hello there.
Glad to be here.
And joining us from our Richmond studio is Dr. Bob Holsworth, managing principal of Decide Smart and founding director of the Center for Public Policy and the L. Douglas Wilder School of Government and Public Affairs at VCU. Welcome.
Good morning, Maylilly.
I'd like to start with you, Bob, if we could. The focal point of this campaign seems to be the whole ethics issue, even though at each step we see clearances. What is going on here? Is it just becoming another platform?
Well, I think what happened here is that early on, the Cuccinelli campaign, probably 6 months ago, thought that one of the biggest issues they would have would be the opportunity to paint Terry McAuliffe as a crony capitalist with some lax ethics of his own. They would look at this green tech plant that they put in Mississippi and tried to put in Virginia. They would look to see how Terry McAuliffe had made his own money, and that they would portray him as an undocumented Virginian, you might say, who didn't share our values and ethics. And what happened, however, is that because of the Giftgate Star Scientific scandal that first enveloped Governor Bob McDonnell, that has in many ways seeped over to Ken Cuccinelli, because it turned out that he had taken a number of gifts as well from Johnny Williams. And the McAuliffe campaign has used this to launch a character assault against Cuccinelli. So whereas Cuccinelli felt that in many ways this would be his issue in the campaign, McAuliffe, at least to now, has been relatively successful in reversing this issue and damaging Cuccinelli, because at least at the moment, McAuliffe has a 6 or 7 point lead in most of these polls.
Rob, do you want to dovetail that?
I'm not sure I agree with that, because I think, in fact, the ethics issue really hasn't hurt Cuccinelli that much. I think Cuccinelli's problems have been much more related to gender-related issues. And I think his argument that he could attack McAuliffe as a bad capitalist was misguided to begin with, because the Republican Party for decades has been stressing the importance of bringing business expertise into government. And Virginians like that. They like people with business backgrounds. So I was confounded by the attempt by Cuccinelli, who's a Republican, to, in a sense, condemn a businessman who's made hundreds of millions of dollars in business. It didn't make any sense to me in terms of the strategy to begin with.
Well, I think what Cuccinelli felt from the get-go here, though, was that it was going to be very difficult for Terry McAuliffe to explain precisely how he made this money. that while he could say he was a business person, he wasn't running businesses in the way that, let's say, Mark Warner ran a venture capital firm or that most people considered business. He really felt that it was going to be extraordinarily difficult, particularly, let us say, with this green tech venture in which people were putting visas on for sale to Chinese investors. And I think that Cuccinelli really felt that McAuliffe was going to have an extremely difficult time explaining how he got rich, how he actually made his money. And it turned out that he's having some trouble there. But certainly I think they felt that this was going to be a far easier case if he didn't have all of these gifts of his own from Johnny Williams to explain.
Yeah, that may be the case, but the fact of the matter is that Virginians have this love with those individuals who've done well in business. And the fact that McAuliffe has never been in legal trouble, he's never been indicted, he's never had serious investigations. In a sense, he was an entrepreneur, and entrepreneurs take risks, and McAuliffe took risks, and he won, and therefore that strategy didn't make any sense to me. I'm not sure, really, that the gift gate has tainted Cuccinelli that much. I think clearly what has hurt him more than anything else is his position on gender issues. That has been the defining issue in the campaign so far, and I don't think in fact, a lot of Virginians don't really care about the gift issues. That's what's surprising to me, that this whole history of no regulation of gifts, no regulation of campaign financing, nothing. Virginians tend to accept and are not very unhappy about it. And that is really remarkable if you look at what has happened from state to state to state, that somehow Virginians are accepting of this and not angry about it. And therefore, really haven't taken it out on anybody in decades.
Rob and Bob, let's talk a little bit about that glitch that did hook McAuliffe. The question about turning in his tax returns. He did absolutely, by letter of law, turn in the amount of tax returns that he needed to. However, Cuccinelli turned in 8 years of tax returns. McAuliffe did not match that. So the question became, well, what are you hiding? What kind of possible conflict of interest could be going on there? And he continues to not match that level of disclosure.
Right. Go ahead, Rob. Okay. Mitt Romney took the same position. In other words, Mitt Romney he had summaries of his. And so it's very difficult for Cuccinelli to attack McAuliffe if the Republican presidential candidate did the same thing. So once again, in a sense, Republicans have been caught much more upset about requiring rich candidates to disclose all their assets. And therefore, it was very, very difficult for Cuccinelli to make that an issue since Romney refused to do the same thing.
Well, what Cuccinelli wanted to do in this campaign was to portray himself as a populist Republican, a Republican who was on the side of ordinary people, a Republican who wasn't wealthy, a Republican who was a different kind of Republican. And that was the way he hoped that he could in some ways damp down or temper some of the antagonism that might be present for his social stands, particularly those, as Rob has mentioned, about abortion and ones that relate to women's reproductive rights. But what's happened here, again, is that he's been unable to do this in part because of the way this Giftgate scandal is enveloping. And that Cuccinelli did release these tax returns. The Democrats, you might recall, didn't give Romney a free ride in the campaign. Time and time again referred to the fact that he refused to release his tax returns, refused to say actually how he made his money and how much money he made. And they felt this was a tactic that they could use against McAuliffe, that they could turn him into this Democratic Mitt Romney in many ways, while Cuccinelli was the populist on the side of the people. And at least up to Labor Day, it just hasn't worked at all.
Yeah, the idea that Cuccinelli is a populist was destroyed with his tax proposal, because when he decided to propose to cut the state income tax, instead of eliminating the state food tax, I mean, that was a very simple populist strategy he could have said. He could have said, we're going to eliminate the 2.5 cents on the food tax. which has been an issue in Virginia politics for decades, going all the way back to Henry Howell in the 1970s. And instead, he said, let's cut the state income tax. Now, that's not a very populist position, to lower the state income tax and shift the tax burden to poor individuals and reduce the burden on wealthy. So the whole notion that he was somehow going to portray him as a populist just didn't make any sense after he made that proposal.
We have a call this morning from Laurel from Hampton. Good morning to you, Laurel.
Hello.
Hello.
I just wanted to say with the Cuccinelli thing is, like the one speaker was saying, that Virginians don't care about them taking gifts and such. And yes, we do. And the thing was, is he was not coming with it. And he might have given money to a charity, which I don't know what charity it is, but he probably got some feedback from it. And then putting it with to a charity, he can write it off on his taxes. So, but he's got a bigger problem, and it really is his gender and attacking. And, you know, we have a state where you can be fired if you're gay. And, you know, it's just that whole Republican attacking people's personal lives. And they need to go. Oh, and we're going to get rid of them, too.
No, I agree.
Thank you for your comment, Laurel.
I agree with the caller on the fact that the gender issue has driven this campaign. And more recently, the fact that Cuccinelli has been tied to the father's rights movement, which is we can debate what that movement is, and the divorce issue in terms of backtracking on Virginia's divorce laws, I think it's been a colossal disaster for Cuccinelli. And I really don't think that the gift gate has played that much of a impact on this race. I think it should have, but I don't think it has. And the gender gap is just huge in this race so far.
I agree the gender gap is really the key demographic issue that is harming Cuccinelli right now. He's running 20 points behind in the polls. Republicans need to get that down to somewhere around 8 or 7 or 9 if they're going to have a chance of winning, because in many races they will run better among men if it's a competitive race. At the same time, it's just hard for me to suggest that this whole campaign hasn't been shrouded in the Giftgate scandal and hasn't in many ways shaped the media coverage of the campaign, shaped how people are perceiving and what's going on. Still, I do believe that Rob is right about the gender issue, and that it's just harming Ken Cuccinelli dramatically right now. He's tried to do a little bit by talking about how he, when he was in college, worked to put in UVA, a sexual assault center that would deal with violence against women. He's had some ads that way. But the reality, I think both in the polls and out in the street, I talked to a lot of Republican men, for example, who have told me that they're voting for Cuccinelli, but their wife has told them that under no circumstance are they voting for Cuccinelli. And that, I think, is the thing that is really killing him right now. And if he can't narrow that gap, he won't have a chance to be the next governor of Virginia.
What is very strange on this divorce issue, which I think is a sleeper issue, and McCall's campaign is now running with it, is why he got involved in it. In other words, why he got involved with legislation to, in a sense, return to no-fault divorce. I'm an old New Yorker. I'm afraid I have to say that sometimes. And New York was one of the last states fairly recently, about 2 years ago, to do away with a fault divorce. It was one of the last states to hang on to fault divorce. And Virginia, a decade and a half ago, changed. And to say that you'd want to go back to that situation doesn't make any sense to me. I don't, unless he simply believes that it's better for the family to keep the families together, and it's too easy for people to get out of their family obligations. But that clearly has not played well with right. women voters right now.
Right. I think what's also hurting Ken Cuccinelli right now that is related to this matter is the implosion inside the Republican Party that started off with the sort of defection of Bill Bowling from the campaign, basically saying he can't even run against him because the convention is going to be controlled by the activist groups. And that since then, what we've had is that we had a number of leading Republican business folks, people who in many instances have supported Republicans, not just sort of the usual suspects, Republicans who are kind of Democrats in reality, but we've had people who have really given significant amounts of money to Republicans, say they're not giving to Cuccinelli, some of them giving to McAuliffe, and giving for their reason Cuccinelli's stance on social issues. So Cuccinelli not only has a problem appealing to the electorate, he really has a second problem that has manifested itself in the last month or two in a much more pronounced degree than he probably originally imagined, and that is the division within his own party.
I think that was expected. I mean, Bob's right. I mean, the problem that Cuccinelli misunderstood is that business Republicans don't mind state spending. There's a long history in Virginia, going back before the Civil War, when Virginia financed the railroads in this state and nearly bankrupted itself over this. And Virginia has always spent a lot of money helping business develop. And Cuccinelli's view is that business should stand on their own two feet. It should stand by itself. It shouldn't get government support. And the business community disagrees with that. They're scared of Cuccinelli. They want the state to invest in highways. They want the state to make these investments. And Cuccinelli doesn't. And obviously, the business community is, I don't think it's on social issues. I think the business community is saying self-interest. We want the state to make these investments. We want the states to invest in universities. We want the state. And Cuccinelli disagrees with that. And he may be, in a sense, more attuned with maybe some of the citizens who hate government, you know, supporting the private sector. But the Republican business community really want that.
Let's try this highly unscientific poll and take this call. And we'll take your other calls as well after the break. But Beverly from Portsmouth, you'll be our designated female voter this morning for this break. How are you?
Oh, hi.
Hi, Beverly.
Okay, you're talking to me now. Okay.
Yes.
And
what is your comment or question this morning?
Oh, okay, my comment or question. Well, he mentioned Virginians don't really care about the undisclosed gifts or the amount of undisclosed gifts, and I just wanted to call in and say, well, this Virginian cares very much about that. I've been kind of following with interest, McDonald's situation, and now, of course, we're looking at Cuccinelli, and I just, you know, sometimes I'm just shocked at what some of our politicians, and not just limited to those here in Virginia, either who...
Okay, and wrap up that point as we go to break.
And it's either extreme stupidity or arrogance, and either
All right.
state is not
Thank you
I'm
so much.
For.
Beverly, we okay. appreciate your input this morning. Thanks for calling in. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Next week, join us for a show on addictions, from smoking to eating. That's next week. For now, stay with us. Today, we're discussing ethics laws in Virginia and how the issue is helping shape the race for governor. Our guests are Dr. Robert Roberts, professor of political science at JMU, and Dr. Bob Holsworth, managing partner of DecideSmart. Good morning, Mary from Martinsville.
Hello.
Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Yes, I am sorry that things, Governor McDonald has been caught up in this situation. And I hope the investigations turn out okay for him, because I think he's been a good governor.
Thank you.
That's all.
Thank you for your call and comment this morning. I was looking at a Washington Post article, and I want to quote from it because it actually talks about that time in which things were being deflected to Maureen, the First Lady. Shame on Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell for trying to wriggle out of responsibility in the Star Scientific gift scandal by sacrificing his wife of 37 years. I found it interesting at the time because where to fall on this issue? Was it about Maureen and Bob McDonnell was unaware, or was it the deflection that this particular writer seems to suggest?
Well, May Lilly, that's a, you know, an interesting question, but I think what we have to understand here about this is that the largest gift that was given, as far as I could tell, was actually given to Bob McDonnell as a loan because of his bad real estate dealings. That what happened here is that we had a governor who in some ways was leading a double life. That on one hand, he was managing the state economy in a prudent, fiscally conservative way, a way that most Virginians were very happy with. But at the same time, in his personal life, he managed to put most of his money into three large rental homes, two in Virginia Beach, one in Wintergreen, plus an almost $1 million home here in the Richmond area that he was living in at one time that he resided in. And and he couldn't rent these homes to cover the mortgages. And so he had to go to one of his political donors, Johnny Williams, and ask him for a large $70,000 loan. So the argument that this is all about the First Lady, I think, really founders on the fact that the governor himself asked for a $70,000 loan in order to ensure that the family's finances simply didn't go bankrupt while he was governor. So that's what was happening at that sense. The First Lady was going around the Richmond area telling many people about the difficult financial straits that the family was in. So that then got compounded with these gifts that were either given to the First Lady and the family, and I might add, the governor was certainly aware of the wedding gift, the $15,000 gift to pay for the catering that Johnny Williams gave as well. He said he wasn't aware of all of the gifts, and he says that he and his family embarrassed Virginia, but that he did nothing illegal because he didn't break any Virginia law. And I think he's probably correct about that. The question is, was there any intent of a quid pro quo between Johnny Williams and him that would put the governor in violation of a federal law? And that's, I think, what we're going to hear about in the next couple of weeks.
I agree with Bob. I think the dilemma is there's a history in Virginia of public officials taking gifts. And I think there's a sense of entitlement. The governor may have gone overboard with it. But there is a sense, if you go back and look at disclosures, and there really isn't any stigma attached to it until this incident. Governors routinely take free airplane rides and trips and vacations and stuff like that, which is amazing. I mean, it's absolutely amazing that you have legislators, you have public governors, attorney generals, who find this type of conduct acceptable. And the citizens of Virginia have not complained about it. I mean, we get some callers that some citizens are upset about it. But there has been absolutely no pressure to change the system.
Rob, you provided this perspective before, that Virginia and Utah have among the most lax ethics laws in the country.
Right. And there are only four. Let's look at campaign finance, which I think is a much more important issue. I think we're looking at gifts when the real scandal is campaign finance, because there are only four states in the country, Utah, Virginia, Oregon, and Missouri, that have no limits on campaign finance. So if you look at who's giving to the governor's campaigns this year, candidates, we're having corporations, we're having unions, we're having individuals giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to candidates. The vast percentage of the money that the candidates for governor are getting are from large contributions, from corporations, from individuals. This is unheard of anywhere in the country. I mean, people are giving vast sums. Candidates don't have to raise money from individuals. What we wanted to change in terms of after Watergate, et cetera, we don't seem to care. And it confounds me why Virginians accept this form of campaign financing system where big contributions are the rule and not the exception.
Joining us now is a listener from Virginia Beach. Good morning, Oxco. How are you?
Hello.
Hi. What is your comment or question this morning?
Yes. I agree with the last speaker. Because I think it's systemic. The problem with Virginia politics is that from the state level all the way up to the local, from the local level straight up to the state and to our federal representatives. The whole ethics issue, it's not a Republican problem or a Democratic problem. It's in the politics, and I don't think that they understand what the term ethics means. Yes, they're within the rights of the legality of the issues, but ethically, in the city levels and in the state levels, they accept gifts. They say they don't, you know, expect a quid pro quo, but almost anybody with any common sense knows that if you are given donations of a large amount from anybody, that somebody expects something in return. And, you know, hiding behind legality doesn't handle the ethics issue. I think it's systemic. And I don't think Virginians as a population, I don't think the people like it. But every time we seem to protest, nothing seems to happen with our legislators.
Thank you for your call this
morning.
That's
my comment.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think people are often very fatalistic about this. That what happens is they think that the entire system is corrupt. There's not very much that they can do about it. And so for that reason, they tend not to make it the biggest issue in any campaign effort. And then beyond that, we have this horrific experience at the federal level where there have been numerous efforts to try to rein in big money through various forms of legislation. And every one of them has been riddled with loopholes, has failed terribly, and we see the capacity at the federal level to simply circumvent any law that has been passed and to have huge amounts of dollars funnel into this system from almost anywhere, and to do so in ways that have increasingly even become secretive, whereas Virginia at least has these disclosure laws. So I think part of the problem for the ordinary citizen is they don't quite know what works better because they've become so inured to what they consider to be a political system that is at least partially corrupt.
I think Bob's absolutely right. But you look at the impact in the House of Delegates or State Senate, and Bob knows this, that if you're a state senator or a member of the House of Delegates, if you run for re-election, the odds of getting re-elected is about 95%. I mean, it's next to impossible to lose your seat unless the party decides to pour in, you know, $1 million or $2 million, something to knock somebody off. When you have that level of immunity, in other words, that level of security, you don't care. Simply, you don't care because you know that your most serious problem is getting knocked off in a primary and not in a general election. So even though you might think the public doesn't like it, you're going to do it because you have a sense of entitlement. You believe this has been it's been done this way in Virginia for decades, and if you're in this seat, you feel that you have a right to take. And all McDonald did here, assuming there was no quid pro quo, was probably go a little overboard. In other words, that he should have known better. He got himself, as Bob said, he got himself upside down on a number of investments. It would not look good if he had to declare bankruptcy or something as governor. His political future would have been destroyed. And so he tried to save himself. But like he said, unless the Feds can prove a quid pro quo, which is very, very difficult to do, he didn't do anything illegal. And as the caller said, this is not the issue. We shouldn't be talking about illegality here. We should be talking about ethics. And ethics has not really a lot to do with illegality. And this system stinks. And it really does. It reeks. And the unwillingness of the General Assembly to do anything about it is just not acceptable.
Yeah, it will be fascinating to see how the General Assembly operates when they come back in 2014 in the wake of all of this. So on one hand, I think they will probably do something about the reporting of gifts, particularly about statewide office holders and the reporting of gifts to family members and the like, all of the things that have become so embarrassing here. The real issue will be how much will they also do about themselves?
Right.
What will they say about their own activities and how many restrictions will they put on that? And at least at the moment, that seems to be an open question.
Clearly, the House of Leadership and the House of Delegates isn't inclined to do much. I doubt the Senate would be inclined, because the incumbency, they benefit from this. And we see incumbents in U.S. Congress. We see incumbents. It's more incumbency. We tried term limitations. They didn't work very well. So most states have abandoned that. It's just that Bob is right. There's a sense of fatalism among Virginia voters. This is the way it's been. It's not going to change. We can't do much about it. So we simply have to live with it. And that's a very cynical view toward your political system. But the politicians, which is sad, present this whole idea that Virginia is one of the most honest states in the country. And you hear this time and time again, that Virginia really doesn't have an ethics problem, that public officials here don't do anything wrong. And they sell that to the public and the nation, where Virginians, I don't think, believe that. I think Virginians are sick and tired of it, as Bob said, but they can't do anything about it.
We used to have Common Cause, a watchdog agency, about more honesty and accountability in government. That is no longer around.
We don't have that in Virginia. We don't have any good government group out there that, you know, pounds the drum for government reform. And most states do.
Well, you know, the one thing I would say here is I think we do have to give some credit over the past few months to the Washington Post.
Oh, I agree.
Which has been the lead, actually, in these stories. They have broken story after
Absolutely.
Story about the Giftgate scandal. I think the Virginian Pilot has also done
and
some very good
Times
work
Dispatch,
there.
And Richmond Times Dispatch, surprisingly, has published many of those stories.
Yeah, it has run many of the Washington Post
Absolutely.
Stories on the front page of the RTD. So I think there has been tremendous reporting
this
that's come out of the Post that really is almost award-winning reporting
absolutely.
In Virginia.
It's been a tremendous the Washington Post has done a tremendous job. Richmond Times Dispatch has done a really good job in terms of on their own doing reports.
Jeannie from Roanoke, good morning. How are you this morning, Jeannie?
Good. I'm very good, thank you.
And your comment?
Well, I think it's not so surprising the sort of apathetic response of the populace towards this kind of thing. Considering the Supreme Court has condoned unlimited campaign resources from partisan groups nationally. So I think when people hear this, people tend to say, even very well-educated people, tend to say, well, of course, they got caught. And it is a question of ethics. It's a question of, I think, a collective populace, you know, really determining what's the correct way to run a democracy. And I think Cusinelli, for example, is one of the worst of the worst that's occurred, simply because he's trying so desperately to be a populistic sort of campaigner when he's so far from it. The fact that he would actually come out and say the things he has towards women and towards sexuality. The whole intent to try to, you know, the whole discussion of banning oral sex is ridiculous because it was directed towards probably the homosexual population that also has had a lot of, kind of controversy and the kind of legalistic manipulation he wanted to do on that population in this state. So this ethics charges or finance campaign charges that are being remunerated around about McDonald and Cusinelli, it's kind of frivolous in a way because I don't think they have taken their position seriously in the state of Virginia. I simply think they don't care. I don't think they care about the population of Virginia, nor do they care about their own behavior. I think they care that they got caught.
Thanks for your call this morning, Jeannie.
Welcome.
Well, you know, up until this Giftgate scandal, Bob McDonald's ratings among the public were pretty high, that they, for most of his term, actually mirrored those that Mark Warner had. And we've seen some decline, maybe not as precipitous as some people might have even thought, with the Giftgate scandal. But McDonald's seems to have had a better reputation in far less negative sense than Cuccinelli. That one of Cuccinelli's problems in this campaign is that his negatives right now are far higher than his positives. While McAuliffe's negatives are higher than his positives, they're not as bad at the moment as Cuccinelli's. And for Cuccinelli, I think that is really a big issue going forward here, is can he find some way to either counter those negatives, or maybe what he's hoping for is that we'll have an election with a very, very low turnout, and the fact that he has perhaps the strongest group of core supporters will enable him to win.
Oh, let's get in here. Oh, go ahead, Rob.
Bob's clearly right on that point. I think Cuccinelli's strategy for the whole campaign was hoping that the Democratic base that was mobilized by Obama in 2008 and 2012 wouldn't turn out. The problem with that scenario was what happened in the General Assembly over ultrasound. That was a catastrophe for the Republican Party. Why McDonald couldn't stop that, I don't understand. In other words, why he couldn't stop those social issues from being pressed through the General Assembly. That re-energized the Democratic Party that had been basically demoralized after its trouncing in 2009. And that brought Democrats together, and it's still keeping Democrats together. And so, in a sense, McDonald was very popular until those social issues came back. And if you go back to the Virginia politics in the 1980s, where the Democrats did very, very well in terms of in a series of statewide elections, it was social issues that wrecked the Republican Party during the 1980s. And now they're back to the same scenario. And Bob is right. Unless Democrats sit home, Republicans can't win on these social issues anymore.
George, Edward, Catherine, and Daniel, you are on hold to talk with us, and we'll be with you after this break. I want to remind our listeners that this is Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. And past editions of Virginia Conversations can be heard at virginiapublicradio.org. Find out about upcoming topics on Facebook and like us. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, supporting public discourse through sponsorship of Virginia Public Radio. Resources for parents and teachers online at veanea.org. More information about Virginia Conversations and other Virginia Public Radio programming can be found online at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.
Today we're talking about ethics and the impact of the issue on the elections. Our guests are Dr. Bob Holsworth, managing partner of DecideSmart, and Dr. Robert Roberts, professor of political science at James Madison University. Good morning, George from Wise County. What is your question or comment? Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, I was wondering, keeping the idea of political gifts in mind, if either of your guests could comment on the possibility that McAuliffe got a lot of his fortune from those green energy billions that the federal government put out a few years back, and from the circulated story that McAuliffe helped Hillary Clinton buy a house in New York in order that she could establish residency to run for the Senate. I think that, you know, these things, if you contrast them to the governor taking a few gifts, there's no argument there. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, George.
This is Dr. Roberts. I believe it wasn't hidden that McAuliffe did loan the Clintons money for the house. They were private citizens at the time, and McAuliffe was a private citizen. With respect to his fortune, I'm not sure how he made his money, but I believe most of his money was made before all that energy grants were made a part of the recovery program. So that's as far as in terms of answering the question to the caller. I think clearly he did help the Clintons buy their house, but none of them were in the public office, and McAuliffe goes way back. He's a close friend of Bill Clinton. And what was fascinating about Cuccinelli in terms of trying to basically sleaze up McAuliffe was that one of the strategies they were going to try to use against McAuliffe was that during Clinton's run for the second term, McAuliffe was head of the DNC. And he claims he didn't orchestrate it, but the whole selling the Lincoln bedroom scandal was under McAuliffe's watch. And Cuccinelli has tried to tie that around in a series of a number of debates, basically saying that McAuliffe was a sleaze for selling the Lincoln bedroom. So they have a long, long relationship going along way, way back.
The caller's question really speaks to the point of why Ken Cuccinelli wants so desperately to get more visibility and attention on his claim that Terry McAuliffe should release these tax returns, because he believes that if you look at how McAuliffe raised his own money or got rich, there are going to be some questions, and the public's going to question McAuliffe's ethics as well as, even more so than they are Cuccinelli, who really, by and large, is just a middle-class guy. But at the same time, this campaign has yet to be successful in raising that issue at a level that the public's paying much attention to it.
And I think that's because there is we may like to demonize in some parts of the country individuals who've made fortunes, particularly business executives. But Virginia doesn't. Virginia likes individuals who've made fortunes in the private sector. And so I think it's very difficult to demonize McAuliffe, because many Virginians say it's wonderful that he's been able to be so successful. He hasn't been indicted. He hasn't been convicted. To be business is a tough world. It's tough. You've got to be tough. And therefore, I don't think, I never thought that was going to stick against McAuliffe. And the tax issue, I didn't think was going to stick.
Yeah, McAuliffe has been relatively adroit, I think, at positioning himself as the second coming, a little bit, of Mark Warner.
Absolutely.
And Mark Warner's the most popular politician in Virginia right now. I don't think he's released his tax returns, but if he did, they probably wouldn't look that different from Mitt Romney's.
Yeah. The federal financial disclosure requirements for senators require you to disclose in fairly broad categories what your wealth is. So we know generally what Mark Warner's wealth and his spouse's wealth is. And so that's been public. So in a sense, from an aggregate sense, we know how wealthy Mark Warner is. The candidates for Virginia governor, I know, have to file public financial disclosure statements of wealth, but I'm not that clear in terms of how definite they have to be in terms of their overall wealth.
Yeah, they have ranges that they have to put in when they put out these disclosure forms in terms of their stock holdings and the like. And that's one of the things that has made this Star Scientific and this Giftgate scandal interesting, is that if you take a look at Bob McDonald's personal statements and Ken Cuccinelli's statements over time, they've owned essentially no stock.
Right.
And all of a sudden, now that you have, in this instance, for example, a $50,000 check given from Johnny Williams to Maureen McDonald, which then is used to purchase a significant chunk of Star Scientific stock. I don't quite know why that transaction occurred, how it occurred, but I presume that's part of the conversation that the federal prosecutors are having with the McDonald's attorneys about why did this occur. And I am sure the federal prosecutors have had that conversation with Johnny Williams.
Let's hear from Edward from Lynchburg. Good morning to you, Edward. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning.
And your comment.
WVTF, right?
Yes.
Radio
IQ. That is one of the stations carrying us.
That's right. Listen, over the years, back in the 90s, I was voted in as a delegate for the Republican Party. And I went to Richmond on a bus with a group of people, and we had a representative speak on behalf of all of us for about maybe 10 minutes. And we were all packed on the bus and sent back to Lynchburg, and I never got a chance to speak. So when a person's not allowed to have a chance to speak or say, for whatever reason they didn't want to let you, you can't get your comments out. I think the problem, the politicians, they don't reach enough people individually when they come to certain meetings in certain areas. Other areas they don't go, so nobody can reach them and talk to them. So I want to say that over the years, I've had a chance with a lot of people to discuss the issues about politicians. And unless they're going to live not a perfect record, but unless they're going to really live an honest record and open their Bibles and go by what the Bible says, and people, I don't want to hear about that Bible. Well, if you don't want to hear about the Bible, there are enough convictions in there to show us how to live honestly before a fellow man. And if we don't want to go by the way that God puts his word out, How did we get to be a mighty nation like our 56 founding fathers, like George Washington? So I think the politicians, instead of slinging mud at one another because people are sick and tired of hearing this one does that bad and the other one does that bad, so after a while you don't want to vote for anybody. And so if we don't have an honest dialogue with people up front and trying to, I mean, don't they realize the office that they hold is a high level of office, that they should have integrity, which affects their family name, their own personal family, and the general public? So how can you trust people if they're not going to have integrity and up front and be honest in what they say and do? And if they did that, they wouldn't have to be slinging mud at one another, because they would both have a reputation that would be honest enough that the people would say, well, we have the personality here, we have the person with the experience, non-experience. We wouldn't have to hear all the mudslinging. And people are sick and tired of that. Why are you going to vote for somebody if you know he's got a criminal record, or if he's got a record that's not impeccable?
Edward, thank you so much for your comment. And we'll move right to another listener from Smithfield. Catherine, you want to mention the Libertarian candidate, Robert Sarvis. Good morning to you, Catherine.
Yes, good morning. So I just wanted to call in and say that, you know, for me, the issue of who I was going to vote for was based on a lot of, you know, your past performance. And for me, Cuccinelli, extremely disappointed in him, you know, when they had the lawsuit for trying to repeal Obamacare and they were going to sue for that. You know, I said I wanted to know how much of the state's money is being used for that. So I wrote into his office. I called into their office. They never gave me an answer, as though, you know, I'm a citizen, I'm a taxpayer, and I felt like you could at least answer my question. You're representing me. So,
that's
so
a good
for
point.
Me, that was an ethical issue, is mm-hmm. you feel like you really don't owe the people that you are here to serve for.
Are you leaning more toward the Libertarian candidate than in this case?
Yes, actually I am. You know, a lot of what's been said about all of them is just extremely disheartening. You know, I'm a veteran. I love this state. I transplanted here, so to speak. And when I hear that this is the kind of characters that we have running, you know, I couldn't bear the thought of not voting. So it kind of upsets me that we do have a third candidate, but we rarely ever hear anybody in the media discuss this third person.
Sorry. We have a one-on-one interview with Robert Sarvis, we should say, coming up in an upcoming edition of Virginia Conversations. So tune into that. But continue.
Fabulous. But so for me, you know, it's you're here to work on behalf of the people. And when you forget that this is who you're working for, not just to try to stay in office, this is not about trying to stay in office the next time. It's about what you're doing for us right now. We put you there to do the people's work. And if you don't talk to the people and try to do what the people want as opposed to what you think should be done in the name of the people, I say that you're not doing your job.
Catherine, would you like to start a fourth party ticket for governor? Thank you for your input this morning. Have a good one. Bye for now. Richmond has a listener who's been patiently waiting. Daniel, how are you this morning? Hello, Daniel. Are you on the air? Oh, okay. We've lost Daniel. All right. So do you want to chime in, Bob? Two good points made here.
Well, I think the last caller was very interesting because of the fact that we do have Mr. Sarvis, a third-party candidate in this race, doesn't have much money, doesn't have that much political experience. But at the same time, you know, it's possible that the percentage of vote that he gets might be a little higher than we normally see from the third party because of the sentiment that we heard expressed by this caller. It sounded like it was someone who was certainly disenchanted with Attorney General Cuccinelli, but at the same time not engaged with Mr. McAuliffe as well. And I think that there is a sense in watching this campaign in Virginia right now that at least the public campaign is a race to the bottom, that the candidates, particularly Mr. Cuccinelli, has issued a number of position papers on key state issues. But the fact is that that really isn't part of the public campaign. The campaign that's driven by the consultants has been essentially directed at claiming that the other individual doesn't meet the minimal qualifications to be the governor, and that campaign may even turn off a few more people than normal.
All right, we lost Daniel, but let's now talk to Larry from Roanoke. Good morning. How are you, Larry?
Good morning.
What's your question or comment?
My comment, I understand that the thrust, the main thrust of the comment is about ethics, but I'm amazed that Virginians, we seem to be bombarded with the age-old political tactic that seems to divert our attention from the real issues at hand. Now, I understand that we would want to be represented by a person who has a high ethical standard, but there are questions that are much deeper for Virginians in terms of economics, education, that should be answered and should be brought to the forefront so that the voters in Virginia can make a great choice in terms of governor. And one of the comments that I think the doctor from James Madison University said was that we are powerless, that the incumbents get in and their position is so stable in their office that year after year after they're elected. This is one of the places where Virginians are asleep. This is one of the places where Virginians are not being represented, because those people who get in those offices forget about the constituency because they're so sure that they're going to be in office. This is one of the places where Virginians as voters need to exercise their power. You know,
thank you so much.
If we don't hold our representatives accountable, and if we don't hold our representatives to a standard, then they can do anything that they want to do.
We appreciate that call. Thank you so much, Larry. Martin from Williamsburg, good morning to you. How are you this morning, Martin?
I'm good, thank you.
What's your question or comment?
Well, I've been listening with much interest, and I agree with so many points that are being made. My main point, I guess I would say dittos to a caller about four callers back, talking about the real moral issues and the fact that if we are not moral in our basic principles, you know, nothing's going to go right. And we can talk all we want about ethics. And the thing the voters can't stand the most is hypocrisy. And somebody can be flaming Barney Frank, whatever, as long as the voters know who they are and they're not a hypocrite, they're not likely to be punished for it. But if they're espousing these high principles and then they get caught, shoving them aside or not paying complete attention, then they get punished for it. And a lot of that is what happened to McDonald, who overall has been a wonderful governor. I'm a major supporter. I'm still a supporter. And the idea, well, it's not illegal. Well, it's not moral. Well, look at abortion. Look at the abortion issue. It's still legal to abort a fetus. I mean, we're talking about principles. We're talking about the little guy. And then we have the libertarians. Libertarianism is not all that. Libertarianism at base says you can do whatever you want to do. You decide. And they're siphoning about 8% of the votes. If Bowling had been the candidate, there wouldn't even be a question right now about who was going to win this election.
Right. Well, we sure do appreciate your comment this morning.
I agree with the Bowling issue is fascinating, because you wonder, the Republican Party and Bob is well aware, had it set that there'd be a primary, and Bowling would have had a good chance of winning the primary. And then the Cuccinelli wing, or the Tea Party wing, takes control of the Central Committee and changes the rules. And I still don't understand why that happened, because in a sense, that was always going to hurt Cuccinelli terribly. And why the Republican Party allowed that to go on is beyond me, because Bowling was the perfect candidate. He had well-respected among most Virginians. He would have easily, I believe, easily beat McAuliffe. And why the party engaged in this type of, you know, inter-party, you know, fighting is just beyond me.
Yeah, I think that was just a very good comment, Rob, because if we were if Bill Bowling had won this nomination, I'm not sure he could have won a primary against Cuccinelli, but if he was the Republican Party nominee, as people arranged, we'd be having a very different conversation today. Bill Bowling would be ahead in the polls by 4 to 8 points. Terry McAuliffe's liabilities would loom larger than they do in this campaign, and it would be very, very different. But right now, that's what's happened, and we have this perhaps the most unusual, oddest gubernatorial campaign that I've seen in my lifetime.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of Virginia Conversations. I want to thank our guests, Dr. Robert Roberts of JMU and Dr. Bob Holsworth of Decide Smart. Thanks to you for listening and joining in. On September 27th, an upcoming interview with third-party candidate Robert Sarvis. I'm May Lily Lee for Virginia Conversations. Have a great week.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.